Yes, we all move one way across the stage, and then we move the other way across the stage, because this is the Dance of the Swans by the Russian composer Tchaikovsky, music from his famous ballet, Swan Lake. Now, the Australian Ballet's on tour at the moment with Swan Lake, and I thought that today, rather than look up at what's happening on the stage, we look down to the orchestra pit. Nicolette Frayon is the music director and chief conductor of the Australian Ballet. She's the only female music director of a ballet company in the world.
Yes,
good morning.
True. Good morning.
The only one.
Yes.
Where are apparently. The others? Why aren't there others?
Oh, because want to be there, I think, but it's still there's still a big gender barrier to conductors and work around the world.
Let's explore that unapologetically and deeply. But let's start with you first. You and I have something in common. We used to play the viola.
I did. In fact, yes, I still have a viola, but I've actually lent it to someone thinking it shouldn't sit in the cupboard anymore. But I'm a very proud viola player, ex-viola player.
A proud ex-viola player. No, I don't think you can be a proud ex-viola player.
Despite all the jokes, I absolutely am. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's a great training for a conductor, it occurs to me, because the viola has the middle voice. The viola really has tunes, actually. You're just filling in a bit of rhythm here and a bit of harmony there, and it doesn't make any sense when you practice on your own. It only reveals itself when you sit down with the rest of the band.
That's right. It makes sense when you're part of the total whole. Yeah. And actually, that's why one of the reasons I loved it. I actually was a violinist to start off with. I really didn't like the very harsh E string. And about 12, decided I wanted to change. Wasn't allowed to swap. Parents said, finish school on the violin. So as soon as I finished, swapped to
you
viola.
You rebelled.
I rebelled and I went to the dark side.
You traded that high E string for that
yeah, I
low
went to the alto
C
clef.
String yes. at the bottom.
But one of the reasons was because I decided that I wanted to be a conductor, and sitting in the middle of the action, as the violas most do, it was the best place to get to know scores from the inside out, to be able to observe conductors. Mostly you're sitting with other members of the orchestra or woodwind brass instead of on the violin section
the
at the back.
The bassoon is right behind you going womp, womp, womp,
all of that, womp, oboes, all that stuff. Horns, you're much closer to everything else.
So and you're released from the arrogance of the first violins who think that everything beneath them is just there to support their showy tune making.
Absolutely. Violas are known as, viola players as the philosophers of the orchestra.
See, so this is a beautiful thing. And of course, it breeds humility in a person to play the viola too.
Of course, as you can tell.
Yes.
Yes.
Still, conducting probably doesn't breed humility. That's not a logical segue. So how did you become a conductor? I mean, we've all stood in the middle of the lounge room conducting the Berlin Philharmonic in our minds with an HB pencil. What made you buy a proper baton and do it for real?
The first time I played in an orchestra, still as a violinist, when I was about 11 or 12, and people speak of the sort of aha Erlebnis, that moment that changed their lives, and that's definitely one. I will never forget sitting with my violin, having practiced the notes at home, as you describe, going, it doesn't really make a lot of sense on its own, and then joining for the first time a large orchestra, and I do see music as colours, this whole world of colour opened up, and I was completely
Do you literally
smitten.
Mean that?
Yes.
You see colours?
Yes.
Do you?
And so completely smitten by colours, by the sounds, and I went, oh, who gets to play with all these colours, not just this, you know, violin, who gets, oh, that's the conductor, I want to be one of them.
So you're painting in the air?
Yes, which can be a bit distracting when you're watching dancers as well in a ballet company, but yes, there's colours constantly going along
this
with the aural.
Fabulous. So you mean your gestures of the trombones and purple kind of floods out of them? And
not necessarily individual instruments, but timbres, harmonies and things are constantly coloured. Yeah.
So where do you look when you're conducting the orchestra down there in the pit? Are you looking at the band? Are you looking at the dancers? Where are you looking?
You're sort of schizophrenic because you have to look everywhere. So an eye in the pit, an eye on stage. In a ballet like Swan Lake, classical ballet, music absolutely married to steps, you have to be watching the stage.
You know, when I sit in the audience at the ballet or at the opera, when that music comes out of the pit, it is a magical moment because it sounds so perfect. You know, you see everybody sort of waddle in and sit down and play with their music stands and
warm up. Yeah.
Warm up and they go, you know, all this stuff. It's all happening. And then suddenly this perfect music, actually with surprisingly few people, swells out and fills the auditorium, and you are just transported to a magical place.
Yeah, totally. And it can't be replicated by recordings. What's also fascinating, you could put on the same music as a recording coming through speakers, could be louder in the auditorium, but it's not as magical as that sound that comes from the pit, where 65, 70, whatever people are working together to create this kind of magical sound there and then.
So does the way you and the band play change depending on who's dancing the role?
Absolutely, yeah.
How?
Yeah, well, probably the simplest explanation is the sort of physicality of the dancers. So we have in Swan Lake 5, 6, 7 sets of principal dancers. Everything from opening a night cast last night, where you have principal male dancer who's sort of 2 metres tall, to one who might be 1.50 metres, so, you know, 5'2" to 6'. And if you just imagine male dancer lifting female dancer over his head, just the time that it takes
further to travel.
Right. Now, they all, according to their height, the way they've trained, there are people who spin faster than others, slower than others. There are people who have higher jumps.
This is a nightmare.
Well, it's fascinating. I don't think it's a nightmare. It's a challenge.
Right.
And it's a real, often it feels like, okay, it's sport. How can I make the music work? It's certainly challenging, but they all move very differently. So you not only have to get to know the score, obviously, as a conductor, and the choreography, so you understand the steps and where how they're supposed to relate to the music, but you have to get to know your dancers really
well. So just as a pianist with a singer will follow the singer, to a degree with the orchestra, you have to follow the dancers.
You are, although following is kind of a misnomer, because if you imagine, with the pianist-singer thing translates to opera, where the orchestra can hear the singers, so they're using their ears as musicians, not only to play with each other, but to follow the singers.
It's a dialogue.
But in, of course, orchestra in the pits, one like, they can't actually see the dancers on stage. And they can't hear them.
No, they can't.
Except for those point shoes, which often sound oddly out of time.
Yes, they've all got their backs to the action.
Yeah, so if
Thought of that. The band never gets to see the show.
They never get to see it. Certainly not in the pits in which we play. In Australia, they're really deep pits, so they can't see anything. So they've got no idea. So if you as a conductor are just following, and if you imagine I give a downbeat to go with, there's a male dancer, he goes spin, 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 goes to his knee for the last note of that big solo, there's a chord that's supposed to time with it, goes bum, just as he hits the knee. Now, if I give that chord to the orchestra, when I see him do it, of course there's a delay between what I see and what I give and what the orchestra follows in terms of what I give. So I have to guess, I have to anticipate what he's going to do in order for the orchestra then to play with his chord. So you're not actually following, you're kind of anticipating all the way through.
But conductors anticipate anyway, don't they? I mean, this is one of the fascinating things about orchestral conductors, is the orchestra doesn't really play on the beat. Well, sometimes they do. But in a sense, you have to signal what's about to happen next to the band, because if you signal at the moment it happens, it's too late.
Well, in symphonic music and even in opera to a certain extent, there's often a culture of an orchestra playing behind a beat. It's weird when you're not used to it as a conductor, and you do have to get used to how far behind they're playing. In ballet, it's really problematic, and we do spend a lot of time rehearsing and say, can you just play really close to the beat? Because if you don't, then I'm trying to guess not only when the dancer's going to land or finish or do a certain gesture, I'm trying to guess how far behind the beat they're going to play. And you're doing all this kind of, while you're performing mathematical calculations, going, how far ahead do I have to give this beat?
So it's complicated. This marvellously clever woman is Nicolette Frayon, who is the musical director and chief conductor for the Australian Ballet. Now, as I said, you're the only woman in the world who does this job.
Yeah.
Is this, it really is the classical music world that sexist that this is still the case?
Certainly, I guess the simple answer is yes. Less so in this country. There are more female conductors working with orchestras in this country on semi-regular basis than I have come across elsewhere in the world. But certainly when I got my first gig working for the Dutch National Ballet, which was my first big professional job in the 1990s, and then through the 2000s working, there were very few women, and mostly the orchestras I worked with, for them I was the first female conductor that they had come across.
And does that flow into the orchestra itself? Are there more men than women playing classical instruments in an orchestra?
Certainly in leading positions, and generally I was quite surprised, having come from Australia where I hadn't really thought of it being an issue, when I went to study in Vienna. The majority of students at the Hochschule, the renowned sort of music teaching institution in Vienna, were women. The people winning prizes in across the board in instruments and things were women, graduating top of their field. But you still, at that point, had a Vienna Philharmonic which didn't allow women into the orchestra.
At all?
At all, at that point.
Not even on the girly instruments?
No, not even on harp or flute or no, absolutely
well, shame,
not. I know.
Shame.
And Berlin Phil was the same. Oh. Berlin Phil started to change as I was a student. There was one clarinetist, a remarkable woman, Sabina Meyer, who was brought in, who started to sort of lead the way to change. But everywhere I looked, in every orchestra I went to, the leading positions, front position, majority of jobs in the top orchestras were held by men. And I even, when I started to work in orchestras in Germany and had a contract as a principal viola, so I was on audition panels. The auditions were held behind screens, but the whole panel would sit there trying to listen how the candidates walked. They couldn't see them in that first round, but could they tell from the shoes whether it was a man or a woman? Could they tell from the way they breathed whether it was a man or a woman? And I sat there, and on the panels, panel members would say, including women, "Oh, we couldn't have that person leading, that's a woman." Like, just straight out, not possible, it's a woman.
This is a scene from a movie.
Yeah, it was absolutely true. And when I did my first big break came through a conducting competition in Holland, Dutch Radio International Conducting Competition. I was the only woman that was accepted into the group that worked for 2 weeks with the maestro. The other male candidates would all talk to each other about music and things. I'd walk up to them, and the only thing, literally, I kid you not, they would ask me to do would be to pass them the tea and coffee. And
I'm sorry to laugh, but that is terrible.
And then afterwards, I'd have managers of orchestras say to me, "We love your work, but we can't employ you because you're a woman," as though that was an explanation in itself. So it's becoming, through the work of people like Simone Young and Maren Alsop and the handful of well-known female conductors around the world, it is changing, but it's still far more prevalent that men are conductors or leaders of orchestras or leaders of section than women.
You know, you've got everyone who loves classical music. For them, this is their fantasy job, because we've all done it. I'm sure we've all done it. We've all stood there.
Stood in it. Yeah.
Yes, we've all conducted the Brandenburg Concerto. We've all conducted bah, 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 bah. We've all conducted Beethoven and had a marvellous time. And you get to do it.
I know. I've actually thought of maybe the next fitness craze could be conductor aerobics, because everybody does it, you see, and you get great upper body. It's yeah. You know, it's the best aerobic fitness exercise.
Yes. We start with Vivaldi and, you know, build
and
up
work
to
up, and I'll do
work
the,
up to Mahler.
The Jane Fonda equivalent of the, I think that's it.
I'm going to partnership with you. This is going to make us a fortune.
I think so.
Nicolette, we're made. Nicolette Fralon has been my guest here this morning. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's been a joy to meet you. She's the music director and chief conductor for the Australian Ballet, and the Oz Ballet's production of Swan Lake is playing in Melbourne until the 18th of June. And you're not conducting at the moment, are you? There's a guest conductor doing that show, is that right?
We have two guest conductors, right. Andrew McGralia, who's a British conductor, colleague mine, and Simon Thew.
But you're there overseeing things. And you can see Nicolette interview musicians from the ballet, from the orchestra, the ballet orchestra, this Friday at 6 p.m. at the Arts Centre in Melbourne, and that's free. And you'll find links to that event on our website. I'm Michael Cathcart, and this is Books and Arts.